COVID lockdowns in the Prime Minister's private apartment at the time, allegations of another gathering on the day of Boris Johnson's birthday. But all eyes will be on the outcome of the upcoming by-elections beyond London, following the resignations of two disgraced Conservative MPs. Wakefield MP Imran Ahmed Khan, found guilty of sexually assaulting a teenage boy in 2008, and Tiverton and Honiton MP Neil Parish for watching pornography in Parliament. If the Tories lose, a ballot on Johnson's leadership is almost certain. Saeed Purizep, London.
A British government minister has launched a direct attack on the pro-Palestine boycott campaign against Israel, claiming that the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement fuels anti-Semitism, including hate crimes in Jewish-rich areas of London. Speaking while visiting Orthodox Jewish community leaders in North London, Community Secretary Michael Gove was quoted by a pro-Israel newspaper stating,
"The BDS campaign is not about running an ethical foreign policy. The BDS campaign is designed for only one purpose, to attack and delegitimize the state of Israel and the idea that there should be a Jewish state at all. The campaign has not only undermined efforts for peace in the Middle East, it also leads to community tension in the UK. We have seen an increase in anti-Semitic incidents, and the BDS campaign is a driver of that."
Founded in 2005, the BDS movement is a Palestinian-led campaign promoting boycott and economic sanctions against Israel. Pro-Israel groups have long lobbied British authorities to act against the practice. Those demands appear to have been answered, with plans announced to ban economic and cultural boycotts of Israel, with new anti-BDS legislation announced during the Queen's speech on May the 10th, a move slammed by pro-Palestine activists.
First and foremost, I think Israel is really concerned with its accesses against the Palestinians, and the civil society is rising up against them. This concern obviously means that the supporters of Israel want to make sure that Israel can continue with its occupation, and they want to close down all potential avenues that highlights the Israeli aggression and human rights violation. And therefore, we see the British government, the Conservative government, who's very close to Israel, to stop the British citizens from trying to carry out their democratic right.
Since the Queen's speech, several government ministers have targeted the BDS. Just last week, Home Secretary Priti Patel branded the BDS racist during a talk at a pro-Israel event. According to Mr. Gove, the anti-BDS legislation will be put forward to the House of Commons before the end of this year. The move, described as a chilling attack on democracy, will also potentially face legal challenges, meaning that the fight for Palestine here in the UK is far from over. Robert Carter, London.
On Monday, head of the Iranian Islamic Seminaries, Ayatollah Ali Reza Arafi, held meetings with the head of the Catholic Church, Pope Francis, and high-ranking prelates at the Vatican. The prominent Iranian cleric presented the pontiff with refined artifacts from his hometown of Maybod in Yazd province and the holy city of Qom. After that, the two religious personalities held private talks. Iran and the Vatican established full diplomatic ties in 1954, and the bond has remained uninterrupted ever since. Not many reflect on the fact that Iran and the Vatican both represent spiritual traditions that have much more in common than might initially come to mind. Ayatollah Arafi's visit to the Holy See coincided with the commemorations of the 33rd anniversary of the demise of Imam Ruhollah Khomeini, the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran. On Sunday evening, Arafi paid a visit to the Imam Mahdi Islamic Center, where he met with members of Rome's Shia community. Here, the cleric attended a commemoration of the late leader of Iran's 1979 revolution.
All thinkers who came before Imam Khomeini had predicted an end for the age of spirituality, and faithful from all religions, including the Muslims, had lost hope in the spiritual ways of living. Imam Khomeini took Islam and all religions to a more elevated spirituality, restoring their hope.
The commemoration held at the Imam Mahdi Islamic Center was also attended by Iran's diplomats and representatives of Rome's Palestinian community. There was much anticipation at the center for Ayatollah Arafi's visit.
Questa visita da parte dell'Ayatollah Ali Reza Arafi.
Ayatollah Arafi's visit to Italy and to our center is very meaningful. We are honored to have him with us, and this spurs us to further study the thinking of Imam Khomeini and to ask ourselves what the role of the Shias is in the community.
In November 2020, Ayatollah Arafi sent a letter to the Holy See in which he expressed his concerns regarding the insults made against the Prophet Muhammad and the hatred expressed by some magazines, journalists, and political figures in different societies. In response to this letter, 3 months later, Pope Francis replied to the Iranian cleric saying he is concerned for those affected by aggression and insults of religious figures, symbols, and sentiments. Max Civili, Rome.
Families of prisoners and their advocates staged a sit-in inside the office of the International Committee of the Red Cross in the blockaded Gaza Strip. Their action was in solidarity with thousands of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails and detention centers, including more than 500 administrative detainees. Palestinian administrative detainees have been boycotting Israeli regime courts for more than 5 months to protest their administrative detention. Administrative detention is incarceration without trial or charge and has no time limit.
Administrative detainees are subjected to extreme suffering inside Israeli jails. They've been boycotting Israeli courts for more than 150 days to protest the detention without charge. Administrative detention is a racist policy and only causes pain and suffering to Palestinian prisoners.
Palestinian prisoners suffer from inhumane treatment inside Israeli jails and are being denied basic rights. Since the beginning of this year, Israeli regime forces have arrested some 3,000 Palestinians, including children and women.
Administrative detention is a systematic policy by the Israeli regime to hold Palestinian prisoners behind bars without trial for a very long time. Administrative detention can be renewed indefinitely, and it inflicts psychological pressure on the prisoners. We have all suffered from administrative detention inside Israeli jails.
During a press conference outside the Red Cross office, the Ministry of Detainees Affairs slammed the inhumane Israeli policy of administrative detention.
We call on all international human rights organizations to come out of their silence and exert pressure on the Israeli regime to stop the inhumane administrative detention policy. Palestinian prisoners are freedom fighters and must be treated according to international laws and norms. The Israeli regime is violating conventions regarding the treatment of prisoners.
Rights activists say Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails will continue to suffer as long as the world keeps turning a blind eye to Tel Aviv's violations of their rights.
According to Palestinian prisoners' advocacy groups, the Israeli regime has arrested around 1 million Palestinians since 1967. Most of these detainees have been held with no charge or trial. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the Most Merciful.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Spotlight. Israeli forces have significantly escalated the killing and repression of Palestinians in the occupied territories. Just a few hours ago, a Palestinian teenager was shot dead by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank, making it the fourth such killing in less than 48 hours, prompting the Palestinian Foreign Ministry to urge the International Criminal Court and other international bodies to break their silence. But will they? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will be discussing the root causes of this escalation in violent attacks against Palestinians, which began in the holy month of Ramadan, and how Palestinians are responding. Our guests tonight, director of the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, Zafar Bangash, joining us from Toronto, and also human rights activist Mohsin Naqvi from Houston, Texas.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Let's begin with Mr. Zafar. Human rights... What has emboldened Israelis, in your opinion, to this point where we see the unthinkable, including the killing of journalists that are being deliberately targeted?
Well, there is a long history of Zionist crimes being papered over by Western regimes, as well as their media outlets. The way they describe, for instance, their crimes against the Palestinian people, they would refer to them as clashes or, the conflict, etc., without identifying that Israel is the aggressor and the Palestinians are victims. Secondly, they seldom, if ever, mention that the Palestinians are under occupation. And as people under occupation, international law allows them to resist their occupiers by any means necessary. So when Israeli crimes are papered over in this manner, both by the Western regimes as well as their corporate media outlets, then that gives a green light to the Zionists to do whatever they like. Although recently a number of human rights organizations have pointed out to the fact that Israel is indulging in these crimes, that Israel is an apartheid regime. This includes the UN High Commission for Human Rights. It includes earlier on B'Tselem, which is an Israeli human rights organization. And then also Amnesty International came up with its report. And in April, there was the UN Special Rapporteur report of Professor Michael Link, who is now retired from that position, but he also issued a devastating report pointing out that Israel is involved in these horrendous crimes. But unfortunately, so long as the Western regimes and their media outlets continue to ignore Israeli crimes, then that obviously emboldens Israel and its occupation army to continue with these horrendous crimes against defenseless Palestinian people.
Mr. Nahvi, Israelis claim these killings and violent raids are in response to Palestinian stabbing attacks. And in some cases, they even go as far as blaming it on Palestinians, such as the case of Shireen Abu Akleh, Al Jazeera journalist. However, numbers don't lie, and the stats of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces are incomparably high. And what does that indicate?
You see, the first thing is that Ms. Shireen was killed point blank while she was wearing a helmet and a vest that said press on it, and the bullet pierced through her helmet. When they try and blame these killings on the Palestinians, what they're trying to say is that when Palestinians come out to protest, it leads to the death of innocent journalists. This is exactly the kind of reaction that an arrogant power will have. They will never take responsibility for their own actions. We've seen this is exactly how the Saudi regime acts as well. It's very similar to the way Israel acts. And we've seen in the past that this is exactly how the United States of America acts as well, using false pretexts to attack the innocent. When they try and push the burden upon the Palestinians, they're simply just trying to cover up their own crimes. As a matter of policy, the Israeli regime has a policy to expand its territories, to expand its control on this land. And the only way that they can do that is through aggression. And these bullying tactics are part of policy. This is not something that they do as a reaction to when Palestinians protest. All of this is done as a matter of policy. To give you an example, an Israeli court recently recently sent a gave a judgment that the Palestinian region of Masafer Yatta should be occupied militarily by the Israeli. There's an entire judgment on this. Even though it'll displace thousands of Palestinians, they'll be expelled from their land, but the Israeli regime gives out a judgment, a formal judgment. So it's very apparent. There is not even an iota of a doubt that this aggression is a matter of policy and not a reaction to what's happening in Palestine right now.
So, Mr. Bangash, why do you think Israel enjoys this level of impunity, and how far can this go?
First of all, we need to remember that Israel is a colonial settler entity. It is illegally occupying another people's land. And the reason why it is able to continue with this is that many of the Western regimes themselves are colonial settler entities. United States of America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, these are all colonial settler entities that occupied other people's lands. They actually carried out genocides against the indigenous populations and wiped them out. And Israel is involved in a similar campaign in the sense that, you know, when it was illegally transplanted or implanted on Palestine in 1948, it went about a campaign of ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. In 1948 itself, what is referred to as the Nakba, about, you know, 750,000 to a million Palestinians were driven out of their homes after massacres were perpetrated against the Palestinian people to create an environment of terror. And of course, you know, that's the campaign that Israel continues to pursue, confident in the belief that whatever it does, it will be protected from any accountability, whether by the Western regimes, the Western media, or any of these institutions, for instance, such as the International Criminal Court, which incidentally, the special prosecutor last year called for investigating Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people, which was particularly focused on Israel's war on Gaza of the year 2014. That, of course, special prosecutor is no longer there. The new prosecutor that took over, he's not really interested in pursuing these things. So unfortunately, the International Criminal Court has also become docile when it comes to Israeli crimes. Now, with respect to your question as to how long this can continue or how far the Israelis would go, the Israelis would stop at nothing. The only thing that would stop them is if there is a concerted effort, both by the Palestinian people as well as those people outside, particularly members of the resistance front, that would challenge these Zionist crimes and inflict some punishment on Israel, because Israel, the only thing that Israel understands is the language of force. And if a punishment is inflicted upon it, then it would not indulge in those kinds of crimes. And the simple example of that is as to what it faced against Hezbollah in Lebanon when they were driven out of much of Lebanese territory back in May of 2000, the year 2000. And then the Zionists made a mistake of attacking Lebanon again in 2006. But that was a crushing defeat for the Zionists. And we see that they have not perpetrated similar crimes again. So the overwhelming evidence is that if Israel is confronted and some punishment is given to it, in fact, it's delivered the same dose of medicine that it is administering to the Palestinian people, then it would stop its horrible crimes. Although, unless and until the Palestinians are able to obliterate this monstrosity called the Zionist ideology, and the Zionists learn to live like normal human beings, I'm afraid this situation would continue.
Mr. Naqvi, Mr. Bangash just pointed to punishment for Israel in order to stop these atrocities. On the other hand, we see that international bodies, including the ICC, have remained completely silent about all of these atrocities. Doesn't that mean that they've lost legitimacy?
To start off with, I believe that the ICC really was never legitimate as such. The ICC has always been under control of the great powers, without a doubt. The bias of the ICC is known to the world, where the atrocities committed by the US, in which, in false pretext, when they bombed Iraq, when they killed innocent Iraqis, no action was taken by the ICC. The bombings of Hiroshima, no actions were seen by the ICC. The International Court of Justice have proven to fail to have played any part in creating justice throughout the world. The ICC, I think the one prosecutor who may have played some role was Fatou Bensouda, but even now we see that she has no powers within the ICC anymore because of the stances that she took while being a prosecutor in the ICC. So as far as losing legitimacy is concerned, I definitely think that the ICC has lost all legitimacy whatsoever. But as far as punishment is concerned for Israel, you see, when someone is given punishment, after that punishment is over, that individual or country is relieved of the crimes that they have committed. The crime that Israel has committed is occupation on the land of the Palestinians. And the only legitimate punishment that I feel is justified is the expulsion of Israel as a country, and for there to be a democratic government where Jews, Muslims, Christians can live in peace on that land. That's the only probable solution to this conflict.
Mr. Bengish, a handful of Arab countries have normalized ties with Israel. Do you believe that to have had an effect on the increasing violent attacks against Palestinians?
Well, first of all, these regimes that have normalized relations with the Zionist regime have no legitimacy whatsoever. In fact, their own people have not accepted the so-called process of normalization. And the idea was, when this so-called normalization took place back in 2019, that Israel would stop its atrocities against the Palestinian people, etc., but it has not. And I don't think that we should put any confidence in these Arabian regimes that have normalized relations, and others probably would join them. I have no doubt about it, because these regimes themselves are illegitimate. So that process of normalization essentially was a way for the Zionists to deflect attention from their own illegitimacy as well as from the crimes that they were committing. And they continue to commit them. So in that sense, your question is right, that, you know, this has in fact emboldened the Zionists to continue with their crimes, because they feel that no matter what they do, there is not going to be any reaction, particularly from these Arabian regimes. But as I mentioned earlier, I think there is what is referred to as the resistance front that is becoming stronger by the day. The Palestinians are becoming more organized, they are becoming united, they are developing more and more sophisticated means of self-defense. And as time goes by, this level of punishment that would be inflicted on the Zionists is likely to increase. And obviously, a stage would reach whereby the benefits to Israel are not going to be as much as the losses to Israel. And so when the cost-benefit analysis is taken, I think that is the time when some of them, not necessarily all of them, but some of them would come to their senses and say, well, I think we really need to have a solution whereby it does not lead to the complete expulsion of all the Jewish people from Palestine. I think historically the Palestinian people have been very generous. They have never really targeted the Jewish people at all, and that's how it should be. It's the Zionist ideology, which is a racist ideology, that has to be eliminated so that all people, as Mohsen pointed out, whether it's they are Muslims, Christians, or Jews, that they live as equal citizens under the law in that holy land, which unfortunately has been turned into absolute hell for the Palestinian people.
Mr. Nalvi, you are a human rights activist. Tell us what you think is the responsibility of human rights organizations under the circumstances.
You see, at first, a lot of human rights organizations are of the opinion that filing cases in the ICC, for instance, or in other courts has an effect. In my opinion, it may create some form of pressure, but not really. Because we've already established the bias that the ICC and other powers to be have over this issue. The one thing that all human rights activists in the world can do is create awareness and to at least ban and propagate the banning of Israeli products. That's one thing that everyone, every conscious human being can do. Our dollars, our money should not be spent in advancing the cause of the Zionist regime. And unfortunately, we're so drenched in the usage of consumerism and capitalism that whether we want it or not, we do end up supporting the Zionist regime by consuming the products that, that they create, support, or make. So I think that's one thing that we can do. Another thing that we can do is we can create awareness amongst the masses and try to propagate the idea of a free Palestine and an end to the Zionist regime on social media. I think there are many Twitter storms that take place online. This is the least we can do. Take part in the soft war, which is also highly recommended by Sayyid Nasrullah and by Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei as well, that this is the least of our responsibilities. We all have a cell phone. We all have a computer. Take part in those hashtags. Contribute as much as you can on social media. Create awareness. Participate in protests that take place within your cities. If you're in colleges, organize seminars and educational gatherings where the masses can be educated on this issue and to the crimes of the Zionist entity. That's something that I feel we can do.
Mr. Bangash, it seems that the Palestinians are now evolving towards taking matters into their own hands rather than waiting for Arab states to stand up for them. How could this shift in policy change the equations?
Well, let's keep in mind that the Arab regimes were never really sincere about doing anything for the Palestinian people. They just used that as a pretext to remain in power themselves, because almost all of the Arab regimes are illegitimate. The Palestinians obviously need to take matters into their own hands. But the way I see it is that even initially, regrettably, the Palestinians were pursuing this secular agenda under the PLO, and now it's being pursuing the same agenda under the Palestinian Authority, which is basically a subcontractor for the Zionist regime. But on the other hand, we also have organizations like Hamas and Islamic Jihad. When this Islamic component comes into the picture, this Islamic awareness that is motivating the Palestinian people, that they are able to carry out the kinds of resistance activities that they are doing. Naturally, it requires sacrifices, but they seem to be prepared to make those sacrifices in order to secure their legitimate, God-given, and human rights. And I think based on this, this changes the equation radically, because now the Palestinians cannot be dictated to by the Arab regimes. They cannot be misled into believing that the Zionists are prepared to concede their rights, etc. We need to be very clear that oppressors and occupiers have never, ever given the rights to the oppressed through negotiations. The oppressed have had to snatch these rights from their oppressors by defeating them and driving them out. That's the history of anti-colonialism. That's the history of all of these countries that have come, that have gained independence. So I think we need to be very clear about it. And definitely the Palestinians taking their own struggle into their own hands and deciding for themselves is what would ultimately bring them victory.
Mr. Nalfi, we're running out of time. We have less than 2 minutes left. So should we expect another intifada anytime soon? A quick answer.
So I think we're already in the midst of an intifada. A soft intifada is what I call it. The constant defense mechanisms that the resistance forces have created and the wounds that are being inflicted by the resistance forces to Israel and to the puppet masters of Israel are an indication that the intifada should have happened a long time back. The fact that Israel is not attacking on a larger scale is because they are not as equipped as they were a few years back. They have realized the power that the resistance forces have. And so if the Intifada does take place, it will definitely be dictated by the resistance forces, and Israel, for the first time, will be on the defense. So if Rehber says that Israel does not have more than 25 years to exist, Sayyid Nasrullah in reply says that it may be less than 25 years. This is not a statement that we should be taken lightly. Practically speaking, it is true. What we are seeing right now, the Israeli regime has truly become as weak as a spider's web. And if there is another Intifada, which there will be, that will be the end of Israel, inshallah. This is not an emotional statement. It can be proven politically. And if we had more time, I could have discussed further, inshallah.
Okay, Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist from Houston, Texas, and Zafar Bangash, director of the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought from Toronto. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen for sharing your thoughts with us, and thanks for following this edition of Spotlight.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Today, we will be concluding our explanation of Surah Ar-Rahman, which is considered the crown of the Noble Quran, since it opens with the word Ar-Rahman, or the All-Beneficent, thus proclaiming one of the most beautiful attributes of the Almighty Creator. As we have said before, this surah highlights the All-Merciful Lord's wonders of creation, describes the end of the material world, and paints an evocative picture of the delights of paradise. Hell is briefly contrasted in Ayah 43 with the joys that await the righteous. The refrain, فَبِأَيِّ آلَاءِ رَبِّكُمَا تُكَذِّبَانَ, which means, so which of your Lord's bounties will you both, mankind and jinn, deny? Runs throughout the surah. We continue from where we left you last week, and here are ayahs 62, 63, 64, 65, 66, 67, 68, and 69 of the said surah.
ومن دونهما جنتان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان مدهامتان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان فيهما عينان نضاختان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان فيهما فاكهة ونخل ورمان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان
Beside these two, there will be two other gardens. So which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? Dark green in appearance due to the density of trees. So which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? In both of them will be two gushing springs. So which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? In both of them will be fruits, date palms, and pomegranates. So, which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? If you might recall, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of Surah Ar-Rahman last Friday, we spoke of the unimaginable bounties of paradise that include gardens where an infinite variety of fresh fruits and shady trees of verdant branches abound, through which springs of limpid water flow. We also said that chastity and loyalty are the characteristics of virtuous women who will indeed be granted the eternal bliss of heavenly paradise. And if they so desire, they will have the company of their virtuous husbands and even offspring. Thus, how can anyone, whether human beings or jinn, deny the bounties of God Almighty, whose rewards for the faithful are beyond comprehension? The ayahs that we recited to you now speak of two other lush green gardens in paradise for every believer, besides the two mentioned earlier. Spring of fresh water flow in these gardens, and the word gushing is used since enjoying the delightful sight of beautiful landscapes where the flow of water creates an enchanting spectacle is in nature of human beings. All these indicate the infinite munificence of the Almighty Creator who grants the people of paradise each and every good thing required by their virtuous nature for enjoyment. These evergreen gardens are always full of various kinds of fruits, since paradise is not subject to seasonal changes. Dates and pomegranates have been especially mentioned because of their high nutritional qualities and delicious taste. So, how can anyone deny the bounties of the Lord Most High? From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, the perpetual bliss of paradise, where lush green gardens and gushing springs abound, along with orchards of various kinds of fresh fruit, are beyond our imagination. Number two, it is part of innate human nature to enjoy natural landscapes, which are indeed delightful to the eyes. And number three, denial of the divine blessings in the transient life of the mortal world is a sign of disbelief in the infinite power and mercy of the Almighty Creator. Hence, disbelievers will have no place in paradise. Now let us listen to ayahs 70, 71, 72, 73, 74, and 75 of this same surah.
فيهن خيرات حسان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان حور مقصورات في الخيام فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان لم يطمثهن إنس قبلهم ولا جان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان
In them are maidens, good and lovely. So which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? Houris secluded in pavilions. So which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? Whom no human has touched before, nor jinn. So which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? These ayahs speak of spouses as among the other blessings of paradise, and mean to say that, for companionship, there shall be maidens of attractive appearance and of virtuous character, devoted entirely to their consorts. Their characteristics include kindness in speech, cleanliness in disposition, beautiful to look at, and in short, all the physical and spiritual virtues expected in an ideal spouse. It is said a virtuous wife will accompany her virtuous husband in paradise, and both of them will be endowed with exceptional beauty. According to other ayahs of the Noble Quran, a pair of believing and virtuous husband and wife will join each other in paradise and shall enjoy their lives in the best manner. According to certain hadith, owing to their firm faith, virtue, and good deeds, such women are more exalted in paradise than the Huris, which are a separate species of females, other than mankind and jinn, created to provide company to believers. Ayah 74 elaborates on the nature of Huris who will have secluded pavilions of their own in the gardens of paradise. The word Huris is the plural of Haura, which denotes a maiden. The pupils of whose eyes are jet black, while their whiteness is quite transparent. Their pavilions, in terms of vastness and beauty, cannot be compared to worldly pavilions, while their chastity is such that no man or jinn has ever touched them. From these ayahs, we learn that number one, the delights of paradise are not the carnal desires of the mortal world, since cleanliness and purity prevails everywhere in the blissful atmosphere, even if the virtuous men and women keep each other's company as husband and wife and have a variety of tasty food and delicious drinks for consumption, but without any bodily discharges. Number two, the wives in paradise are beautiful both inwardly and outwardly, but chaste and pure. without displaying themselves to anyone other than their husbands. And number three, houris, which are a different species of females other than jinn and human beings, are meant to provide companionship to the virtuous men in paradise, while for the virtuous jinn, there will virtuous females from their own kind be. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, here are the last three ayahs of Surah Ar-Rahman, that is 76, 77, and 78.
متكئين على رفرف خضر وعبقري حسان فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان تبارك اسم ربك ذي الجلال والإكرام.
Reclining on green cushions and lovely carpets. So, which of your Lord's bounties will you both deny? Blessed in the name of your Lord, the Majestic and the Munificent. Ayah 76 provides the last depiction of the blessings in paradise, saying, the virtuous men and women recline on couches covered by the best and fairest of green fabrics, not comparable to anything manufactured by human beings in the world. In short, these and other expressions reflect that all things in paradise, including fruits, food, palaces, couches, carpets, and companions are all best and unrivaled in terms of quality. It should, however, be noted that such expressions may not fully convey to us the innumerable blessings of paradise, but merely reflect shadows of the same. The last ayah is a reference to the greatness and glory of the one and only creator of the universe, who is the absolute owner of everything. And among his attributes are magnanimity, graciousness, mercy, forgiveness, and bountifulness. Thus, this surah opens with the divine attribute of Ar-Rahman, or the All-Beneficent, to denote some of his innumerable blessings. And after questioning at frequent intervals, the irrationality of the deniers of divine bounties ends with the phrase, blessed is the name of your Lord, the Majestic and the Munificent. Here, an important point needs to be emphasized, and that is the prime position of the last and greatest of prophets and his infallible progeny, who are guides and beacons of light towards the bliss of paradise, which means that any denial of their divinely designated role is disobedience of God's commandments and refusal of his bounties. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, the quality of the comforts in paradise is beyond our imagination and cannot be compared to any project designed or anything manufactured by human beings. Number two, the blessings mentioned in this surah are a mere reflection of the actual bounties in paradise, which are innumerable. And number three, Allah, the Exalted, the one and only creator and possessor of the universe, is majestic and glorious, as well as merciful and munificent. On this note, we come to the end of Surah Ar-Rahman, and inshallah, next week, we take up explanation of the next surah that is named Waqi'a. God bless you and goodbye.
IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.